Look at Proverbs chapter 9. We see that there is a structure within the proverb that makes it one unit. And the structure in Hebrew is called a chiasm. So there is a, there's a bottom section, and they point up at a middle section. So if you look at the text, if you have it open, you notice that verses 1 through 6 is about a feast. You see that there's a woman who's calling those to a feast. And then if you look at verses 13 through 18, you'll see that there's another feast. So the text begins with a feast and the text ends with a feast. And there in the center of that feast, there's something that these two feasts are hoisting up and pointing to in the text. And that's what we're going to look at. We're going to see this structure and we're going to follow it. We're going to look at feast one and feast two, and then we'll look at that middle section together. But it's all one large portion of the text. And like I said, it's a text about feasting. And feasting is part of the normal cycle of life. If you think about your life and the way that your life is structured, your life is structured on normal times and then a feast, and normal times and a feast, and normal times and a feast. And much of life is structured that way. One medical doctor that I read said that all religions in the world follow feasting and then fasting. And then that cycle of feasts and fasts becomes the cycle of life. And he says, if you look at all the religions in the world, there are times of feasting and there's times of fasting. And those are things that are common. And he's saying, because it's in religion, it's common to all of humanity. This is something that we share. And it's something that we see here within the text as well. Feasts are a part of our experience in life. You can think about even our Christian experience in life. We have the Lord's Supper, and we see that as our great Christian feast. And then we have times where we don't have it, and then we have it. And that is always pointing us ahead as we're looking forward to a great wedding feast in eternity as we look ahead to Christ. And there's times throughout life, there's weddings, and there's other celebrations, and there's family gatherings and holidays and all of these things where we gather together and we feast and we enjoy life. And feasts are something that are part of our human experience. And this was true for Solomon's time as well. Feasts were common as part of both the religious as well as the cultural observance of times in Solomon's day as well. So it's very common to give wisdom under the idea of a feast because it's part of life. And we see first this evening, as we look at this first part of the text, we see that wisdom sets a feast. So wisdom sets a feast. That's verses 1 through 6. And I'll read that again. It says wisdom, and I want you to think about all of these six verses in the context of a feast. Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn out her seven pillars. She has slaughtered her meat. She has mixed her wine. She has furnished her table. She has sent out her maidens. She cries from the highest places of the city. Whoever is simple, let him turn and hear. And him who lacks understanding, she says, come and eat of my bread and drink of the wine I have mixed. Forsake foolishness and live and go in the way of understanding. So we see that wisdom has here set up this feast. And in her setting up the feast, she's done all of the prep work to get this feast ready and to send people out to give invitations and to call them in to the feast. Notice that she has built a location for feasting. It says she's built the house and hewn out the seven pillars. So she's expanded her property, in a sense, so that she can host this grand party. And wisdom saying, I want this grand party. We're not having a little private party in the corner. We're having this party where there's great invitation and there's a need for this giant house for this feast to occur. And then we're told that she prepares the food. She slaughters the meat, whatever those meats are that are needed. She mixes her wine. That's the preparation for wine to be consumed. And she sets out this table. So she gets the house ready. She prepares the food. And then she sends out her maidens with invitations. And who is it that is invited to this grand party? Now we would think, or maybe we are required to think in the text, that if wisdom is throwing this great feast, that maybe wisdom would send out her maidens to call the wise to come and partake of this feast. Surely wisdom wants to enjoy the company of others who are wise. She wants to enjoy those that are able to have philosophical discussions and think on wonderful things and speak on high and lofty ideas. But I want you to notice that's not the invitation that goes out. The invitation that goes out is to the simple. And it's to those that lack understanding. This tells us something of the character of wisdom. Wisdom is not proud in the sense that wisdom can only be around those that are like her. Wisdom is generous and gracious and says, if you are needing to grow in knowledge and understanding, if you are simple in your mind, and if you lack understanding and you lack wisdom, then come to this party. For the house is ready, and the feast is ready, and the table has been set. And then we're told that she says, via the maidens that go out, those that bring the invitation, they're called heralds in the ancient world. The heralds go out and they say, come and eat of my bread and drink of my wine. Friends, we see that in this offering from the heralds, there is not merely an offering of food or of fun or of friendship or of fellowship. It is an offering of life. Look at verse 6. Forsake foolishness and live and go in the way of understanding. Life is offered. And friends, you remember from the last 2 weeks in Proverbs 8 that we are primed in the book of Proverbs to have our hearts and our minds go to that second person of the Holy Trinity, the one who came and took on flesh, the God-man, Jesus Christ. And we see those parallels within the text, don't we? We see that Jesus is the one who says that He will build His church. He is the one that Isaiah looks ahead to and says that the tent posts are going to be expanded so that the whole family can come and to be together. Jesus is the one that has prepared a table and set that table for you and has called His heralds to go out to the highways and the byways of this life, calling on men and women, boys and girls, to come to the wedding feast and live. We see Jesus Christ in this text. We see that life is offered in wisdom's feast. We can think of Isaiah 55 a text that I use frequently at the Lord's Supper. Ho, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters, and he that has no money, come buy and eat, buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend your money on that which is not bread, and labor for that which satisfies not? See, everyone out there is laboring for that which satisfies not. And Jesus Christ calls on those out there, on the highways and the byways, the ones who are working and the ones that are living life and the ones who are in the rat race, the ones who are just going through the motions of life, living foolish lives for foolish things. Jesus says, pause and look, for I have set a feast before you, and you are invited to come and live. Friends, think of the beauty of that message. Think of the beauty. John 4, Jesus says to the woman at the well, if you knew the gift of God and who it was that says to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given to you living water. See, Jesus provides that our thirst may be satisfied and our hungers may be satisfied. And he does that analogously by way of a feast. Again, you can think of John 7, where Jesus is at a great feast, and there he stands and he cries out and he says, if anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. He who believes in me, as the scripture says, out of the heart will flow rivers of living water. Friends, Jesus Christ invites you to this feast. Now, you would think that if Christ, here called the wisdom of God, that if Christ is setting up this table and he's offering this feast, that surely anyone who hears about this feast would come. Anyone that would hear the table set, the meat is here and the wine is here and the bread is here and you come and you will have life. You would think that everyone would come. But friends, I want you to notice, and again, think of that chiastic structure, front, back, and then something else in the middle. We move to the back of the psalm in verses 13 through 18, and we see also that there is a fool that sets a feast. There's another feast that's calling for the attention of humanity. The fool sets a feast, 13 through 18. A foolish woman is clamorous. She's simple. She knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house, on a seat at the high places of the city, to call those who pass by and who go straight on their way. Whoever's simple, turn in here. As for him who lacks understanding, she says, stolen water sweet, bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he does not know that the dead are there and that her guests are in the depths of hell. You see, this feast that is prepared by the one who is called the foolish and clamorous woman is a feast that is so different from the feast that wisdom has set forth. The foolish woman, the image that I have in my head is like this narrow dark alley and this little shack, and there's this woman sitting on like an old kitchen stool, and she's got like a cigarette hanging out of her mouth, and the door's ajar, but it's dark in there, and she says, come on in, there's a party in here. And she's calling those off the street. Contrast that with the feast that the wise, that wisdom has set up. See, this woman's character, this foolish woman, it says she's clamorous. She's just loud. She's simple. She herself is in contrast to wisdom. She's simple, meaning she lacks knowledge. She doesn't know. She's not a woman who has what wisdom has in all of the preparation that's gone into preparing her feast and sending out her maidens with the invitation, calling those to come and to have life. For the clamorous woman, again, in my mind, the alleyway door is open. She's sitting there calling them in off the streets, but she herself is simple and foolish as well. And friends, this is the feast that the world invites you to. You can think about maybe your own life. Maybe at times, maybe you grew up in the church and you knew something of the feast that Jesus Christ offers, and yet somehow you found yourself walking down that alley and that little door is ajar, and that woman says, come in, and we're having a party. And you went in and you looked around in the darkness of her home to see all that the world has to offer. And you realize that although she too has a feast or a party, that it's nothing in comparison to that which is offered by wisdom. See, she has an invitation, just like wisdom has an invitation. She sits at the door of her house by the high places, and she's just calling out. And verses 15 through 16, she calls and people answer. And as she's calling out, again, she is simple. She lacks knowledge. And she's calling out to those that are simple and that lack knowledge. And she's calling them to come in to participate in foolishness, not in wisdom, in foolishness. And friends, what's on her menu? Verses 17 through 18. She has sweet and pleasant things. These are things people will enjoy. Sweet things people enjoy. If someone offers you birthday cake, you're going to enjoy the birthday cake. If somebody offers you a cookie, you might enjoy the cookie. And things that are pleasant, things that are good for the senses, the eyes and the mouth and the smells and all of these things, they're sensuously pleasant. But the text tells us that these are stolen things and secret things. It means there are things that are given. The things that are sweet that are given are things that never belonged to her in the first place. If you were at a party at a friend's house and they said, by the way, everything here we stole from Publix, it sort of would change the way you feel about being at the party. Everything she offers is stolen. Nothing is hers. And concerning things that are in secret, we see that when the curtain is pulled back, we see that the bread that is eaten in secret is pleasant. What's that mean? What it means is that there are those that go to this party that the foolish woman has invited them to, and they participate in the feast. And they do it under the cover of darkness because they know in their conscience that it's sin. This is something done in secret. Right? So you can think of, you know, you tell your children that the cookies are off limits that were just made, and there's one little butter mark on the wax paper that shows there was a cookie removed. And the kid that took the cookie doesn't stand there and eat it. He goes off in the corner and he eats it in secret because he knows it's wrong. Or when we talk about children and we say that when you can hear the children, you know that things are okay. But when the children are quiet, you check on them because they're doing something wrong. See, things eaten in secret. It's that participation in sin under the cover of darkness and finding pleasantries in that sin, pleasantries at this party or at this feast, without confessing or acknowledging that this is something that is not a good choice. But as this curtain is pulled back, as we said, and we saw sweet things and we saw secret things, behind all of this is death and hell. Friends, could you imagine being at a party where sinful things are occurring and God giving you wisdom through whatever insight He would give that, where you were able to just look around and see dead men and dead women enjoying death on their way to hell? That's the image. The image is that you go in this dark door and this feast is there and people are in the corner eating the things and they're enjoying the sweet things and it's dark, and what they do not realize is that everyone at the party is dead and that they're on their way to hell. Maybe you've seen the 14th century panel painting by Hieronymus Bosch called The Gardens of Delight, or The Garden of Delights. And in The Garden of Delights, there's three panels. There's heaven, and then there's earth after the fall, and the third panel is hell. And the second panel has all of these images that are bizarre. There's people playing instruments, and there's these weird creatures with people coming out of their mouths. And you look at the painting, and it just looks like a party. But when you get close in and you realize what's going on in this painting of Hieronymus Bosch, it's totally bizarre, because it is the image of the fool's feast. And friends, that's where most of our friends and neighbors and loved ones are. That is the feast that many choose. And then we look at this middle section, and maybe you wonder. It says, "He who corrects us," this is 7 through 12, "He who corrects a scoffer gets shame for himself. He who rebukes a wicked man harms himself. Don't correct a scoffer, lest he hate you. Rebuke a wise man, he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be wiser. Teach a just man, and he'll increase in learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For by me your days are multiplied. Years of your life are added. If you are wise, you are wise for yourself. If you scoff, you bear it alone." And we read Proverbs 9, and maybe your thoughts are, here's a part about a feast, and then there's this sort of traditional Proverbs stuff in the middle. Like when we think about Proverbs, we think of pithy little statements, and here's a few pithy little statements, and then it goes back to another story about a feast, but it's a different host and it's a different result. But I'm telling you, this chapter is structured perfectly that we would think about a feast and think about a feast, and they lift up this middle portion where we don't just see what we might think are pithy little proverbial statements. We see, thirdly, in 7 through 12, that a response is required. A response is required. We look at this section and it somehow seems out of place. We think it's maybe the second third of the book of Proverbs, these pithy statements. But I don't want you to think that this is out of place or out of order or just a one-off. What we see here is that there's this wisdom feast that's offered, and we know this is New Testament revealed as Jesus Christ, and there's this feast of the fool that is offered, and many of those in the world will go down that direction, but the response required by you is that you would look at this first feast and you would look at this second feast and you would realize that in the middle, you must respond. You're being called here and you're being called here. Surely you've been called to attend a party and had another invitation to another party. I remember when Lydia and I were first married, Anna was a baby, I think she was one, and we had friends and relatives being married on the same day, one in Michigan and one in Pennsylvania. And we said, what do we do? How are we going to choose? We divided and conquered. One, Lydia went to one, I went to the other. And we represented at both. And we realized that we have to make choices like that. You could have gone to one or the other. It doesn't matter. The point is that we get invitations that we have to respond to. And here is a feast, and here is a feast. And Solomon, the writer of the Proverbs, is saying, especially to the young people, these are the two feasts that you're going to be invited to frequently in life. You will be invited to come and to sit at the feet of Jesus Christ. And the world will call you and say, we are much more fun. And you will. In your life, time and time again, need to respond to these two feasts. We find often, as this section tells us, that those that are invited, often they scoff. The things of God are scoffed at. And you can see that. The wicked man harms himself. You don't correct the scoffer, lest he hate you. So the scoffer is over here. He's saying, oh, why would you go there? Why would you be a part of that feast? That's the feast for lame people. Why would you want to be a part of that feast? And here Solomon saying, in one sense, as you look at these two feasts, you don't even owe him an answer. Just go to the feast. Just go to the feast. He says, give instruction to the wise and he will be wiser. If you speak to those and you say, here's why this is the feast I'm going to go to. He's going to come with you as he is wise or she is wise. Or you teach and they increase in learning. You see, this whole middle section is a contrast between those that go to this feast and those that go to this feast. There's scoffers and those that are willing to be instructed. There are those that are willing to be taught. Those that grow in the fear of the Lord. Those that grow in wisdom. But we're told that the scoffers bear it alone. The scoffer will end up here. And when we look at the whole of the teaching of death and hell that we see within the Word of God, despite on the surface this invitation being to a party of enjoyment, that the darkness that they enter through that door is the darkness of loneliness eternally. For they will bear it alone. Congregation, we need to consider these two feasts. And we need to consider that much of our life, and even all of our life, is frequently receiving these two invitations. Over and over and over. And one is this grand house that's been expanded and pillars have been set up so there's room for everyone. The table spread has been put out. There's meat offered. There's wine offered. There's bread offered. And there's a host, Jesus Christ. And this party over here, this invitation over here, is one where the door might be open and the woman may be calling in off of the streets those that would come and saying, when you come in here, what you will experience is sweetness and it's pleasant. But the reality is that it's death in hell. You, even today, have two invitations before you. Which one will you answer? Amen.